You are now tuned in to the Quiet Storm at the Metaphysical Dentist. The doctor's in.
With your host, Celine.
Welcome to episode 4 of The Metaphysical Dentist. We have a special guest today, J. Robert Gundy, a beloved father, grandfather, artist, and DJ, a Gulf War vet. He has many wonderful experiences he's going to share with us. He's a great artist, and he's one of our good friends, and Tina and him had an excellent interview today. Check out the links in the description for more information on Mr. Gundy. So enjoy the show. Thank you.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Tina. How are you?
I'm doing so well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm super excited to hear more of your story today. So would you like to say anything else about your introduction?
Just that I live off in the woods with my wife, and it's a lot of solitude, and that's the way I like it.
Nice, yeah. And you're also a very well-known artist. In your own right. So we actually have one of Bob's paintings, and it's hanging in our living room. We love it. He does some really amazing work. Would you like to talk a little bit about your art?
Okay. Well, I like to paint with acrylic on
yeah, me too.
Canvases. The bigger, the better. And,
right on.
I like to stand in front of an easel and paint. I like to paint on my feet, but for a couple of years, because of just some bad feet, I couldn't do that. So I had to sit down, and so I started working on smaller things. I can work at on a drawing table and sit mm-hmm. in a chair, although I don't do that sitting down a whole lot even there.
I know, I struggle with that
feet,
too.
Yeah, you gotta move. Painting is such an exhilarating experience, and your arms are moving, and you're moving that paint around. My body just follows behind it.
Yep.
And if I'm listening to music, I'm gonna dance.
Yeah, me too. I'll be dancing around the paintings quite frequently. So you're with Castle Black Radio, right?
Right, and that's Black with two K's, no C. That'll throw you off if you're looking for it. It's a metal station, but all of us DJs that work there, we can play whatever we want, except rap and country. That's the owner, but doesn't want that on the station. Kind of takes away from the metal, I guess.
Right.
Although I love country rap, I have tossed a couple of those songs in there, so I got away with that. But usually I just play metal and hard rock. I have a 3-hour show every week on Sundays. It starts at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's called Sunday Sacrifice. I'm the DJ Cremated Survivor. And don't ask me why I came up with that name. It just popped in my head.
It's very, very no reason, creative. But. Yeah. Very creative. Kind of like we came up with Metaphysical Dentist the same way. Or like, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Just, my near-death experience happened at the dentist. So that's kind of the precursor.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. And somebody's not watching the nitrous that can get away from you.
Oh, that's the idea. That's some good stuff, isn't it?
I know. It is. It is.
Sitting back and relax and getting some of that gas. A nurse. She had to tell me something, She interrupted my beautiful dream I was having, and she knew what was going on. She goes, I'm sorry if I bugged you during your trip.
That's funny. So you've had a near-death experience as well. Me and you have talked about that before. I would love for you to share that.
Well, let's set the scene. I was like 13 years old. It was winter time. Just finished the 8th grade season of football, and the cold was getting to me there towards the end, and I wasn't feeling good. I was a little slow, and so I came home after the last day, and I just kind of collapsed then. And my parents put me on the couch in the TV room we had. And, they were used to us kids getting sick. I got the flu or this or that.
Right.
Anyway, I think after a week and I wasn't getting any better, and I would look like I was blowing up like a balloon. They took me to the doctor who gave them a big lecture. remember, and then they had to take me to the hospital. Now, what happened was I had a clog, okay? My kidneys couldn't empty. And so, yeah, they didn't know what, but they didn't know that. They didn't know what was going on.
Right. Don't expect
that
it.
I was just blown up. Yeah, that's 1967, 68, somewhere around there. Back then, you know, pretty much if you were, say, like, for example, like I am today, a dialysis patient, back then you could just assume you're going to die in a few weeks because nobody could afford to pay for a machine.
Oh, right.
Insurance companies didn't do it. Yeah. So I was laying in the hospital bed one night, and they told my parents I was dying. And I know this because I was laying in bed. I couldn't talk. I was too weak. I glanced over to my left and see my dad sitting there with his hands clasped. Again, I remember that. He had big, strong hands. Mm-hmm. And he was shaking, and he was praying. And I wanted to tell him, everything's going to be okay. I didn't know how that could be, but
you felt
that's
it.
What happened. Well, yeah. Well, then all of a sudden, I was up looking down at my body. I was up in, like by the ceiling or something. And what had happened was this dark, it was a black angel. Shadowy like, came down and lifted me up and wrapped me in his or her, actually I think it was his wings. And about that time, then the doctor called my dad outside into the hallway, at which I could see into the hallway as well. And I looked at him and heard him saying, I think I more really read his lips, but he said he's dying, and then he said a few more things, and then my mom went running down the hall crying. My dad came back in the room and sat down and started praying, and then the angel said, told me without words, no words that needed, it was spot.
Like telepathically.
So look up here. And look up here. And I looked up at the ceiling, and the ceiling was suddenly gone. And it was a misty scene. And I could hear this singing of a million voices singing really sweetly and softly. Like the sounds, like they sound like a harp almost. I don't want to get too corny, but it was that kind of a sound, but yet it was them. It was coming from them. It was their voices. And it was beautiful. And I wanted to join them. And I could feel the presence of thousands of people that I knew, but yet they died long before I did on this earth. But it was like, we knew each other from before, a long time ago, and we were all part of the same group, this body. And anyway, before I start crying, because it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it sounds really beautiful.
I can't wait to get there at times. Yeah. The angel said, now look down there. There you are. There's your weak, miserable body in that bed, and this is bad. And he's crying. And he said, you make a choice, you know. He said, you make a choice. You want to go here with all these people you knew from before and join them, or do you want to stay down there? And just remember, you can always come here with these people, you know, in that misty area. I will always be able to go there. That's not going away.
Right.
And he said, this life you are leading here on this earth right now will never happen again, and you're here to learn and enjoy and feel the pain of it all. And do you want to miss it to go here where you can always go anyway, or are you going to go there? And I started thinking, I knew there was a girl out there for me, and we were getting married and have some kids and grow old together. So I decided to go back down and it pooped. I was back in my body. And I wanted so much to tell my dad that right there what happened, but I just was too weak. Mm. But you know, in a year or so ago, I can't remember, I was talking to my dad one time. I said, do you remember when I was in the hospital there and I was dying? I can't remember the hospital's name, but he said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, well, the doctor called you out into the hallway and he told you I was going to die probably, you know, and that night. And you came back in and mom went running down the hallway crying. He goes, yeah, that's what happened. Okay, well, I saw that and I heard it.
Wow, isn't that amazing? Yeah. So
when
you came back, what prompted you to come back? I mean, I know you saw yourself and they, you actually made a conscious decision. Did you just like pop right back and open your eyes or?
Suddenly I was back in my body and looking up at the dark angel as he, or now I want to say she. I can't. The angel was releasing me from his arms and wings, and then kind of went back up and into the mist, and that whole scene just closed up, and bam, it was the ceiling again.
Wow. Do you think maybe that was like, you said it was a dark angel, you think it could have been like what we know as the angel of death or whatever?
Yes, that's what I think. It was a messenger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing.
No, of course not.
And I've met that angel. Again, I've seen it swirling around my head.
Wow. What was going on at that moment?
It's not. Oh, acid. Oh, no. It was actually mushrooms, the magic mushrooms. And I thought I was going to die for a while. Oh, no.
It brought back familiar memories.
I kind of think
sometimes maybe like the mushrooms and stuff that's hallucinogenic like that just kind of either pushes the veil aside or opens up some sort of, you know, alternate reality that you're on. I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Beautiful sometimes.
Yes, I'm not
sure
what it is. Yes, it is. And sometimes the person I'm with, if they're, you know, also using the same stuff, we see the same things and hear the same things sometimes.
That's quite a thing, too, because you'd think a hallucination that's just merely a figment of your imagination couldn't be shared with somebody else, right? Yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah. Then it's like you're actually seeing something, and it's not just a hallucination. It's just your perception has changed. I take it, I wanted to ask you, did you notice any physical changes after that happened? Like, I know you were already kind of sick and you were in the hospital, really sick, actually. But, you know, like, any temperature changes or did you bring something back with you, you know, sort of that sixth sense, do you think?
Let's see. Yeah, well, I gained more self-confidence for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I also grew taller and lost weight that during that hospital stay and the weeks to follow, and became much stronger.
Oh, amazing.
But I felt more aloof from my family. I don't know why. And I've always been that way since.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was riding the school bus there growing up, there was this little girl used to get on the bus, and she never talked to anybody. She was really cute. And she would just stuck to herself. And every time she'd get off the bus, a dog would come running out to meet her, and she was so sweet to that dog. And that was the moment when I first met her and saw her. Well, I didn't meet her. I didn't, because I was too scared to talk to her. I had seemed like the whole time I'm growing up, I had a hole in my heart, you know, something wasn't there. And when I saw her, that just it was like that hole was gone, and
Are we talking about?
Hey, we're talking about Pam.
I thought so. Okay.
My wife. Yeah. She, I mean, I never did talk to her, you know. And then one day she was gone and I moved away. And then, you know, but it was just like something was missing again after that. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, I believe I was thinking of her when I was, that Angel was asking me to make a decision.
I believe you were.
Like, yeah, if I was like, man, if I don't do this, she's going to be sad.
That's right, though.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of twin flames? That sort of phenomenon. It's kind of like a soulmate thing, but they say like your twin flame, there's one person for everybody that like completes you and like helps your awakening process, and you guys help each other and that sort of thing. It kind of sounds like that. I think that's what me and Chris are.
Oh, that's wonderful feeling, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
You're not searching anymore for whatever it is,
yeah,
you know?
Right, you can relax now and develop yourself.
Develop yourself, exactly, yeah. So you and Pam, do you think, you guys ended up getting together, what, when you were?
Yeah, oh, let's see. I was 16 and she was probably just turned, well, she's 15. or 14, almost 15. Somewhere around there. We can't quite remember now. It's just that I was friend, neighbor boy I hung out with, came over one Saturday morning and said, hey, man, come on. We're going over to Cindy. Cindy's with her. Let's go to Cindy's house. You know, she lived behind him and on another street in back of him. And I said, yeah, what he was telling me was Pam was there, but it wasn't so much about Pam, but about her older sister who was coming to pick her up and had this cool Camaro. that's what he was interested in. And so, you know, come on, you got to see this. So, okay. So we walk over there and sit on the front porch talking a little bit to Pam and a lot to Cindy because I knew her. And this guy was there and a couple other neighbor boys just from down the street. And when finally Pam's sister pulled in the driveway in that big car, powerful car, not always a big Camaro, but I think that was, it might have been a Firebird. Oh, boy.
Muscle car, yeah.
Who cares? Yeah, I wasn't interested in the car anyway. I was interested in that sweet girl sitting on the porch swing, a little too shy to say much. So we did. I know I kept staring at her. And, oh, my God. I was just melting.
You were in love. Love at first sight.
Oh, yes. And eventually I didn't even ask Pamela. I was too shy even then. I asked Cindy for her phone number. And she said, well, yeah, she'd like to talk to you. And I went, oh, wow, okay. So I called her up and we started talking. And I had access to my mom's car. And so Pam lived on the other side of Cincinnati. I go over there at least once a week and to visit her, take her to the movies or, you know, whatever, something, mm-hmm. do something every week, almost every weekend. And, you know, except when her parents thought she might be getting too serious with me. They didn't care for me. I had long, curly hair. I was nice to them, you know, but they liked to pick at me. And I fought back. Believe me, you start picking on me, I'm going to start calling you names, too.
I believe that.
Yeah.
Got to stand up for yourself.
That's right. They would try to get her hooked up with other people. And they used to tear me up when they, you know, I think I was going to have a date with her. I mean, I only had like a little time off from work and school and stuff, you know, and sports. So I think I was going to have a date with her, and then she said, "Well, I'm going over to such and such. I'm going on a boat on the Ohio River with so and so." And you know, and one time it was like, "Oh my God, he's a 21-year-old man." There she was, but just turned 15. You know, oh man, I thought her parents were crazy for doing that. But yeah, they wanted her hooked up with him. He was going to be a wealthy young man, and he was. But eventually we won out, and yeah, here we are.
Here you are.
6 years later.
Wow, and you guys seem so in love still. Like according to your.
Oh, yeah.
That's so sweet. Well, I was gonna ask you, when you started your family and you were moving around, I know that you lived in a few quote unquote haunted places. Do you wanna talk about I remember specifically you talking about the horse farm. That one was pretty bad, right?
That was a place we moved to when I first got out of the army. It was a big old house. It was over 100 years old, and it sat on a nice big long stretch of property with all these trees lining the driveway, and on both sides there were horses. The guy that we rented from raised racing horses in those I can't remember what you call them, little buggies, you know, little two-wheeled buggies. Mm-hmm. They race. Yeah, that's the kind of horses he raised.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But anyway, yeah, we... can you hear me?
Yeah, we got... There it goes. Okay. We had a little feedback, but we're good.
Okay. I can't remember the first thing you noticed. Well, before we moved in, we did know the people a little bit that lived there, and they were getting evicted. and that's why we got to move in there. They would tell my daughters mostly stuff that happened in the house, strange things, voices, knockings, feeling like you get choked, stuff like that. Anyway, I didn't. I wasn't sure if I believed all that stuff.
Right.
So we moved in. Yeah. We moved in. While living there, like that's Kelly was our youngest daughter. She was middle school at the time. And she would have friends come over, and they never could spend the night. They always would call their mom to come get them because just something spooked them about the house. Mm-hmm. Nothing they could put your finger on. It just felt creepy.
Like a creepy feeling, yeah.
So things happened like, knocking on the wall. Pam's in my bedroom right next to it. It had a doorway to this little room that we used for an office. And there would be knocking on that wall in between the two rooms. One of us stay in the bedroom, the other would go in the office, make sure there's nobody pulling the trick on us. And it would knock, and it was loud knocking. And
wow. And we'd
be like, well, okay. I know. One time, I would see, used to see this big black dog running down the hallway past the office door. And I just remember the long red tongue hanging out, and it kind of looked at me out of the, sideways as it was running by. And it was a pretty solid looking dog, but of course it wasn't there. We didn't have a big dog like that.
He was the ghost dog.
We did, yeah. And my granddaughter, well, her dad and her, and they had, and my daughter too, they had a dog like, it was like a Malamute. Anyway, they had it. It ran out in the highway. I think it was chasing, another dog that was in heat. Anyway, it got run over. You got to run over the boy. Oh, man. Anyway, so I got this, my son in law said, man, your dog's right down there on the highway. You got to get him. So he did. He brought him home and buried him in the front yard. And then we used to see this shadowy figure of a dog rise up out of that grave and run to the house.
Wow.
It wasn't the same. Yeah, it wasn't the same one that was running down the hallway. One time we were all, the whole family had been out, and we coming down our driveway, come down a little bit of a hill, and then there's a long straightaway. It's about a fifth of a mile. And we saw somebody in the front of the house, and as we were coming down the driveway, it was a guy wearing blue bib overalls and a red flannel shirt. And he saw us come, and he started running around the house to the back, and I accelerated quite quickly. And we got back to it, everybody piled out of the vehicle and started looking. There's no place that anybody could run fast enough to hide, mm-hmm. you know, behind the house.
Right.
So, so we just didn't know what to think about it. But then people started seeing him, that guy on top of the car. And, yeah, he gave off an evil feeling.
Now, you said people, and like random people?
Guests, friends that would mm-hmm. come over.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And
yeah.
Sometimes they would move. I mean, they would just have to go home. And they say, you know, I saw that guy up on, I can't take it. I gotta get out of here. He's evil. He's awful. I gotta go.
Most people don't handle it well.
He has moved. Daff follows us around. He's not here now. We were all sitting in the living room one day, and up above the living room was an attic, and we heard footsteps walking back and forth up there, and so we went to check it out, and of course, there was nobody in the attic, and nowhere to get out except come into one of the bedrooms, and so we used to hear that a lot. Pam, however, she never heard any of this stuff at first. And one time she was in her bedroom, our bedroom, and she was sitting on the bed, and she was going through her change because she worked at a job where she counted all the money out, to go in the bank at night. And she would go through the change at work and pull out, you know, interesting coins, or old silver coins, that sort of thing, and exchange it, you know, with her regular money. Anyway, she was going through that one night, and she thought I walked into the room and sat down on the bed next to her.
Ooh, I know that feeling.
There. Yeah, and she looked over. Oh, no. And she could see the depression in the bed where somebody was sitting next to her. Oh, that after that, she became a little more aware. She started hearing some of these things, seeing some of them. Now, the one thing that really got to me was one night, oldest daughter, Tara, was upstairs taking a shower. Pam and I are downstairs in our bedroom. And the front hallway, the foyer light came on. And so I went out there, and there's nobody. But it was one of those things, like a bad connection or something, I guess. Sometimes it would come on. Sometimes it would turn off. Yeah. So went out there and made sure it wasn't somebody had come in. And I turned, made sure the light was off now. And as I turned, I heard a rustling sound on the stairway. And I looked up, and there you walk up the steps. There's a landing, and then it goes back up the other way. Right on that landing, there was this really large black shape, it was like a bag full of people or something. That I could see him punching the side of the bag. It's all this movement and pushing on the bag. And it was coming down the stairs towards me. And it was making a rustling sound like, I don't know, leaves, dried leaves.
Right, yeah.
And the thing, and it was dark out there, but this thing was darker than the dark. So I went, I gotta get out of here. And I ran down that hallway into our office and then into our bedroom and jumped under the covers. What's the matter? And I had the covers pulled up over my head. anyway, I told her what it was. And she just was like kind of amused, mostly amused at me pulling the covers over my head like a little kid. Later, Tara came in and talked to us and said and it was about the same time I saw that big black thing. She said she heard what she thought was me coming up the steps, and I was like stomping on the steps. And stomped to the bathroom door and stopped. And then I gave an evil giggle.
Oh, thought goodness.
It was me. Yeah, it was not me. It was that, I don't know, it was just the house.
The entity, yeah.
Just call it the house, yeah.
Sometimes they seem like they're memories of a house, you know, memories of a house or memories of the land. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, this was evil. But, you know, they did,
I was just going to say, I'm sorry. I was going to say, you said that you talked to the family that lived in that house before and they had some stories. Did you guys ever do any like historical research on that house? Did some bad things happen there?
The guy that built it for his wife, let's see, hand up. Now, I might be getting a little wrong. One of them, husband or the wife, killed their little boy and girl.
Oh,
and,
no.
And then the mother got killed by the husband. And then the man hung himself from the stairway.
Holy crap, man. That's like an Amityville horror story or something.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a... Partway down our driveway, there's a spot where it always got really cold, and I never saw her, but Kelly, my youngest, said she had seen the mother down there walking back and forth, she figured looking for her little kids.
I can't even imagine. I'm sure lots of trauma there.
Sarah one night, she and her husband, they were sleeping in the bedroom upstairs, and she woke up, she felt pressure on her chest, she opened her eyes, and there was a little boy of maybe 3-4 years old sitting on her chest, and she went, oh, wow, now this is, you know, it was like, everything's always horrible here, this is cool. It's a cute little boy, and she said hello to him, and he smiled, and then all of a sudden his teeth became sharp points, and he just, his whole face changed, and he grabbed her by the neck and started choking her, and she couldn't scream or anything. She was banging on her husband next to her with one arm. And he woke up and sat up, and then the little boy disappeared.
Ooh, that gave me chills.
Oh, yeah. I think that is the worst overall thing that happened there to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was not real excited about seeing that thing on the stairs, but that thing, that boy in our chair, that'd be the worst. Anyway, we wanted to move a few times. Every time we thought about moving, the house began acting up. More knocking, more things. And eventually, I mean, it just seemed like And it was like all hacked up, and it would calm us down, and we'd stop talking about moving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
Yep. It happened to us at the house in Zebulon, the really bad house that had all the activity. It was the same way there. It wanted to suck your energy off you or something. Didn't want you to move. And anytime I had planned to do a clearing, like, you know, do some sage and do some blessings and prayers, it would, like, make me super tired and just try to give me resistance to doing that as well.
Yeah, just make you so tired, just start, never mind, I'll go watch TV or I don't know, you know, something.
Yep.
Oh, we had a bathroom downstairs in that house, and there was the handprint of a little child on the mirror, in when you came up the bathroom, and, well, I mean, it showed up. Showed up when you took a bath, we would wipe it off, and it'd come right back.
Every time, like you steamed up the shower or whatever.
Yeah. But you just could not wipe it away permanently. It would always come back.
Right.
Man.
That's some crazy
so glad
stuff.
We finally got out.
I know what you mean. Was that, you said you had worked with... Oh, that's right. I remember you telling me about that. So the reason y'all actually eventually left was because the house burnt down.
Right. And that guy with the bib overalls followed us, too.
Oh, man.
And, it was weird at the next house.
Oh, yeah. You said you had worked with Red Elk. Red Elk was a famous shaman.
I didn't work with him. I talked to him, got advice from him.
Right. He helped you with your issue.
Yeah, via email,
Very cool.
I used to listen to him on Coast to Coast with Art Bell. And he had some interesting stories, believe me. Especially when it came to the little people that came to visit him from out of the earth and to drink beer and smoke cigarettes.
I read up on him some today because I wanted to familiarize myself, and that's a very interesting story. So Red Elk is a intertribal medicine man, or he was an intertribal medicine man. And he worked with he was part of the Blackfeet and Shoshone nations, and he was also part Irish and French. He was a member of the Hioka Society. I think I said that right, which is a Hioka empath is some sort of empath where they kind of mirror your actions back to you. And it's like kind of like a Native American psychologist, if you would, I think, is how I like to describe that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I you know, when that house burned down, we moved to another house. It was nearby, across the road and down a bit and into a hollow.
Hollow just sounds kind of creepy, too. Like, it sounds like you're going to encounter some stuff in the hollow, you know?
Yeah. Satan's hollow. Oh, no. When we moved to this house, it was a hurry. We had to go somewhere. We rented this place. It was too small because there was, like, I don't know, 8 of us, you know, kids and pops. Anyway, it had a garage, a single car garage attached to the house, but you had to go outside to get in. Just go out one door and turn left, go into another door.
Right.
And it was cold. Oh, it was a miserable place. I had a lot of good paintings out there. We lived there a couple of years, I guess. First night or so out there, I just set everything up and started painting, and I heard a bang on the roof, you know? I was like, what? Mm-hmm. What could that be? Oh, that's right, probably just a pine cone. Well, the next day I looked around, there was no pine cone, no stick that might have fallen. And besides, the pine cone tree was way up the hill, and it couldn't have fallen on the house. it began happening a lot, bang, and then one day it started this banging noise on the wall. It's like, oh, what? No, what is this? And I started trying to communicate with this thing because, you know, it was not something falling on the garage. It was happening on the wall. And I had I gave a series of three knocks, and this thing answered me back with the exact same rhythm. And so eventually I got kind of friendly with this thing. It didn't scare me anymore. It scared Kelly, though. He was out there one night and it did it. I'd come in and I'd say hello, and it would knock three times. And it's like, oh, it's cool. Mm. Okay. One day, I'm out there painting, middle of the afternoon. I got getting real close to my canvas on the easel, because I was painting some fine work, and I don't wear my glasses. Never have when I painted, never will.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up there real close, getting familiar with my canvas, and all of a sudden it seemed like somebody turned on a light to the right, and I looked over, and there was a young man, and a little bit taller than me, long blonde hair, wearing a white robe, and he was embedded in that wall where the knocks came from. And it, like, oh my God. And I just backpedaled all the way far away from it as I could get without taking my eyes off him. The head never turned, but I could tell the eyes were following me. And I came to rest at on the edge of a tomb or a workbench at the back. And that's when I closed my eyes and I opened my eyes and shook my head. And that thing was gone. It was like, oh, man. I mean, I was, you know, it's not so much scared as surprised and in awe.
In awe, right.
And, and so eventually I got the nerve up to go up back up to the easel and over to the right to that corner. And I put my hand where the young man had been, and I could feel the outline of his body, but it was energy I was feeling.
Yeah.
Solid, yeah, but I could feel it all. And so that began like a 3-week experience with me daily and nightly. So just go out there and put my hand over there. And so I would feel such joy at first, all the happiness every time I put my hand up. It's like, I want to go with this thing. And that's when I contacted Red Elf, started talking to him about that. And he suggested I, you know, explore and communicate, but watch myself. Don't give myself to it. You don't know what it is.
Right.
It sounds like it's trying to come through the veil, perhaps, or it's a messenger from God. It, you know, could be something on the other side of the veil, and over there are bad, bad, bad things, and you don't want to be responsible for opening a hole in the veil, is what he told me.
All this stuff comes through.
I mean, he said those things scare him, and he's been around a while.
Wow.
So I would touch this thing and just enjoy. And every time I got such joy, I would cry. I would stand there for an hour with my hand up against this energy, and it felt so beautiful, and it just showed me some of these beautiful colors and pictures and images flying past my eyes. It was great. And then I started getting mixed feelings.
You started to get the
still very strong. Yeah. Then the bad stuff. I started seeing the ugly stuff, feeling the pain. And I thought, this is a messenger of God, and God is showing me what God feels when God looks down upon his creation and he sees all the, oh, look at the little bed, all that, look at those guys. Oh.
Mm-hmm. He sees the beauty and he sees the pain.
You know,
right.
Brothers and he's got it all at once. And it must be a horrible thing. I would not want to go throughout eternity feeling that pain like that.
Right.
Even with the joy.
Yeah. the contrast. I mean, you have to have the bad with the good to understand the contrast and appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you kind of got a picture of the worst of the worst and the best of the best. So.
Yeah. So it was wonderful experience. I'm glad I had it. It faded out after about 3 weeks. But ever since then, every time I approach my easel ready to paint, I get this images running past me, just like I used to get when I would communicate with that long blonde-haired guy, young man,
right,
on the wall.
Tell me about the colors. You talked about the colors were amazing that you saw.
Yes, I can't describe all the colors. The colors, they never stood still. They formed images, and it would all roll past my eyes like you're watching a strip of film roll by. Mm-hmm. And I could, a lot of times, that's what the communication was in those colors, the combinations of them, and how it made me feel, and put the thoughts in my head of what it was trying to convey.
That's
and
so
I
beautiful.
I still do that sometimes. Oh, it's wonderful. If you could only slow them down and long enough so I could paint them, you know, every once in a while it happens. But usually they just flow on by. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get, you said that he was showing you color combinations. Do you get like a craving for color? As an artist, I kind of crave colors on certain days, and I like want to paint those colors together, and I become like obsessed with it.
Oh, wow. I there's certain colors I want to use, you know, sometimes. I go, I want to paint this, you know, like, especially now I have these little 5x7s that I work on.
Yeah.
A lot at one time. Sometimes I go, no, that's not the colors I'm wanting to work with, and I put that aside, grab another painting, and, you know, because some days I want red, and some days I don't.
Right. I've been practicing, or I've actually been studying color therapy, so I'm very interested in psychologically when we, like, especially artists, when we crave colors or we want to work with that color, it seems to go along with like the chakra system and like balancing out an imbalance. So it's something interesting I'm trying
right.
to get into.
I never thought of that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, you know, when I was in college many, many years ago, I started studying architecture.
Very cool.
Only went about a year and a half. Yeah, it was neat. I just couldn't hang with it. I didn't have the time for all the work. I had to work. Most of those people I was with didn't have to have jobs. We were studying colors and how they can affect people, and we thought it would be cool if only we could own a big skyscraper in downtown Cincinnati and put up color combinations and change them every day up in the windows.
I love it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and maybe like one day just drive everybody mad.
Well, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but I know I saw an article the other day in hospitals when a baby was born with, what do you call it when they're yellow? Jaundice. They would drench the baby in this blue light that would help to heal the jaundice. And blue is kind of on the opposite side of yellow. And so that kind of went along with what I was feeling about color therapy. I've actually had dreams about color therapy where like somebody is in the background in my dream telling me how to use colors and like think about it and like try to project with my mind a color onto somebody to heal their imbalance. And so
wow, that's beautiful.
A really beautiful dream. Yeah.
Maybe
we'll talk more about all
great,
that.
Yeah. You know, I have a great grandson, Lil Arkin. He's about he's gonna be 2 years old soon. He was a preemie. Very early, and my mommy and my granddaughter had to lay in a hospital bit for weeks before they eventually helped Arkin out. because she lost some of the fluid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had a rough little Sarge, and they brought him out. He was really tiny, and they for weeks he was in like an incubator. Mm-hmm. You could stick your hand inside this glove that was inside the incubator to touch him, and he needed to be touched. Come on, now he's a baby.
Oh yeah, babies and, definitely do.
But yeah, he had jaundice too, and they would. They put
ultraviolet?
Flashlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they had the protective eyes, so he had these super sunglasses on. Mm-hmm. I got a picture of some. It is so cute. He's just like got his arms less stretched out. He laid back and he's smiling. I mean, he's in heaven. He got that light shining off. Got those sunglasses. Yeah, it's so cute.
Aw, bless his little heart.
All right. Like now, he's catching up with everybody. Soon he'll be, you know, his development will be the same as other people.
Certainly he will catch up. Sometimes we have rough starts all through different areas of our life, and it gives us a chance to grow, and then we catch up, and you never would have known it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
Bob,
I was behind.
How okay. do you think these metaphysical experiences have changed you? Has it just kind of given you more of a feeling that, you know, there's more than just this? There's something after death?
There's something after death. And, I cannot be sure what it is. I think we get to choose situations to be born in again. We die and we go and we review our life, and we see what we were lacking, and we choose another life to go in where the situation will help us develop those points. And maybe one day we actually ascend up and don't need the physical body anymore to develop.
They say we'll turn into a light body.
Yes. If it's anything like I saw when I was having my near-death experience, I want to be there and enjoy that.
That's what everybody says, that feeling of bliss. Now, I didn't. With my experience, I didn't encounter anybody. I just jumped out of my body. I went down this little sort of tunnel, but then I was just in the same room, and I was being pulled towards the ceiling, and I was a little confused because my head felt big and my body felt little. And I was looking around the room, just kind of observing, and I saw the doctors. And then at the very moment that I recognized myself, I was right back in my body and kind of freaking out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it was more of an accident. Like, I just kind of popped out and was like, oh, you're not supposed to be out. Get back in there.
Yes. Listen, I have, I don't remember. I have taken this substance, smoked it. it's a sage shaman's weed, sage weed from Mexico. It only grows in a certain area in Mexico. And it's a short little.
Is it salvia? You're talking about salvia?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that.
Okay. I don't recommend people taking it, using it for party purposes. It's certainly not for that. You could have a bummer of a trip if there's lots of noise and activity going on around you.
I can imagine.
I'd prefer to be alone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First time I ever did it, I only did it twice. That's what happened. I was in my own little bubble in my studio. And that's when I was still in this old garage. And I would, it was like I was surrounded by this bubble. And I popped my head out and see reality and go, oh, let me get back in there. And I'd pull back in and inside that bubble. What was happening, there was I did have some music on. It was some cool jazz. And there was this procession of flowers rolling past me on both sides. It was just so neat.
That's cool. Kind of like a kaleidoscope,
Think of just line up a bunch of flowers, you know, on a conveyor belt, and they're all just going past you, right?
You know, okay.
And you got that on both sides. That was me.
That sounds pleasant. You like to paint flowers a lot. Is there kind of inspired by them?
I start painting them again. Yeah. I'm going to start painting more of them.
The second
time was a little different. I was sitting there, same place. Everything was the same. Me alone in the studio, nice mellow music playing. I smoked the bowl of this stuff. And it just, you know, it went to work on me. Stuff only lasted about 10, 15 minutes. But I found myself in front of these big brownish-like buildings, like out in, in the desert area, Pakistan, Afghanistan. And it's more like a fortress type of a building. Brown, it was like brown stucco.
Okay.
And there were three old men standing in front of the gate, and I walked up to the gate. They were just wearing robes. And I found myself, I was just wearing a robe. And so they looked at me, and one of them said, well, show us. And I was wondering, what does it mean? And then I realized, I just put my fingers in my chest, and I pulled the skin open on my chest. And they could see my heart. That was symbolic. They could see my heart. And they all got, you know, peered at it, got real close. And I let go, and chest was fine. And they looked at me and nodded and went, yeah, he's okay.
They were checking out what kind of a heart you had. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You said that was on the salvia?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I've never done it again. I don't need it now.
I actually did try that one time, just a little bit. You know, it was legal in shops at one point. But nobody had told me, you know, about it. I didn't expect sort of a mystical experience. But I will tell you that it was the last time I ever tried it. I felt like the sofa was folding up in on me and trying to eat me. Like, I couldn't escape. It's kind of funny, but it was a little terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. I can see where it would be. Yeah.
I do remember it being pretty quick that it was over.
Yeah, it wasn't like LSD, which lasts, you know, till the next day sometimes.
Right.
Had bad ones on there, but always end up good. I got to say that. They always ended up well.
Yeah, you always get something from them.
I would usually just find myself curled up in the corner of the kitchen, scared to death. But that would only last a little while, and then, you know, all of a sudden it was clear, and then he's like, and get up, and everything was beautiful.
did you ever figure out anything on, you know, some of the hallucinogenics? Like, I don't know, I've heard people talk about, I figured out the way an engine worked one time, because I could actually take it apart and piece it, see the diagram and understand, like, how the fuel makes a piston move and that sort of thing. Never able to explain it as well, you know, when I was, you know, back to normal. But I know that, like, it definitely unlocks certain things in my brain, and it sounds like it does it for a lot of people, too, where it kind of just unlocks some things, and you're more open to figure stuff out.
I would feel a lot more love and want to, you know, project more love.
Exactly. Empathogenetic, yeah.
Usually what it did to me was just push me further along painting or wanting to paint. You know, I was just dabbling. I never took acid for a long time now. And back when I took it, I really didn't paint well at all. I just had the desire to learn. And right. I would learn things. Yeah, I would learn things when I was on those trips. And I could take the time to look at an object and see what it really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And how it was, you know, shaped and the colors interacted. And then I would, that would stay with me.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. So as far as, we didn't talk about your upbringing. Did you have any kind of religious upbringing, or were your family, were they kind of not so religious? I just wanted to know how it may have affected the way you looked at your experiences.
That's good. Okay. I was born, and my sisters were, sure, we were all born in Pennsylvania in the mountains of Allegheny Mountains.
Okay.
I was born in a hospital. It's called Indiana, this city. In that hospital, and then taken home to a little coal mine town called Mentzel.
Okay.
Mentzel, Pennsylvania. And I think for 2.5 years or something like that we lived there. And then the church we went to. Now, I don't remember the churches back then. I can imagine what they were like. The elders of the church one Sunday morning surrounded my father and told him that they were told by God that he should go to Cincinnati to God's Bible school and study to become a minister, a preacher of the faith.
Was that you
and
or your dad they were saying?
My dad.
Yeah, okay.
My dad. And he believed it. He was naive. He believed that stuff. And they said, well, how am I going to, oh, don't worry about that. It's all taken care of, you know, paying for the education. So he goes out there, and he had to find a job and a place to live and apply at the little college there so that he could get a place for us to live. And he did all that, but he realized that nobody was setting him up for, you know, an account to pay for this. He is going to pay for it himself. That pissed him off.
Yeah, I don't blame him feeling like he didn't know somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like they throw you in the water and say, don't worry. And then you have to learn how to swim.
Right, exactly.
My mom went to that school too. She graduated. My dad did not. He didn't want to be a preacher. It took him, you know, almost 4 years to figure that out. But the churches we went to, they were the kind where people would, they feel the Spirit of the Lord and just jump up and start running up and down the aisle screaming.
Oh, wow. Kind of like Pentecostal, right?
Yeah, like that. They weren't Pentecostal, but it was something like that. And
gotcha.
We went to those kind of churches, I guess, for the first 7-8 years of my life. I just remember, at first it used to scare me, so I hear somebody just give that a big whoop, you know. But after a while, I thought it was kind of funny. I like to see the old fat lady running up and down the I mean, the breath was flopping up and down. I'm like, wow, this is cool.
Chris used okay. to, I think when but, he was a kid, when Chris was a kid, he used to go to, or his parents made him go to a church like that. And he told me him and his cousin used to get in trouble because, you know, it's always funnier when you're not supposed to laugh, but it would be something wild they had never seen before, somebody acting like that. And they would just get the giggles and he always got in trouble.
Oh, yeah. See, that was a problem with me. I couldn't sit still. Anyway, I got smacked a lot. Matter of fact, I used to get taken, drug out back and have a whooping. It was painful, and it seemed like it went on forever. And
they make you pick your switches?
That was my mom. She would just use her hands.
Yeah.
And stuff. And then she dragged me back into the church. And I wasn't allowed to make a sound, but I did it again. Believe me, I did get it again a couple of times. It eventually I had to learn how to cry silently, you know? Sit still and cry silently. But yeah, I always associate church with pain.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Never wanted to go, and I haven't for many, many years. I just don't need that. It turns me off.
Well, I have a terrible social anxiety now, or either I just pick up on the energy of everybody around me. So it kind of is a little overwhelming for me most of the time. And, you know.
Oh, yeah, also, you can feel that. Yeah, definitely. Feel that. Well, as they call it, the spirit movement. It's that, you know, all the emotions of everybody in there all together. Yeah, that's something.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, amazing. Well,
I grew up in a Southern Baptist church, and it was not as lively. Like, they were singing and stuff, but, you know, in terms of, like, with my experiences where we were in places that were, you know, we were having these metaphysical experiences, we really didn't have anybody to talk to, because the people in that sort of church, like, I felt like they didn't know what to do with it, and they just kind of dismissed it, like, well, we'll pray on it. So we ended up contacting. We ended up talking to a shaman, too, who helped us very much. And his approach I actually liked, because it seemed like he had compassion for the things on the other side, because it's like, in his opinion, there were spirits that were lost and didn't know that they were supposed to go home, like to the light.
Yeah.
In addition to, like, there were those trickster type things, and then there were just the plain evil that just wanted to hurt you, you know. But it was a mix. It wasn't like it's just all bad, or, you know. So
there's good, yes, there's good spirits out there trying to help us and things.
I do believe that. I don't believe in angels.
I have an angel, I think, that looks over me.
For sure. Well, I think this is a good point for us to wrap it up. Me and you had talked about possibly doing a part two, if you're interested in that. That way, maybe we could, you know, I can put all the links in the description, you know, so that people can find where to find you on Facebook to look at your art. We're going to put a link to... you know, who Red Elk was, because that was kind of an interesting aspect of your story. Certainly give him a little honor.
Yeah, he helped me a lot.
Yeah. And then something we hadn't talked about yet was that you are actually, you were on the kidney donor list. You need a kidney. So, you know, if anybody has any expertise on dealing with the donor list, or, you know, if they are able to donate a kidney. I know you said you had O positive blood.
O positive, yes.
Okay.
That's what I need.
Yeah.
I wish they quit giving away to other people.
I know it. Well, we're going to put a link in the description.
I was on that list for a long time, 6 years, 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I was on that list for 7 years, and they took me off because of that. They called me and said they had a kidney for me. It was 67% mass, which is, you know, pretty good. And I was like, you know, and when they called me back later and told me they couldn't give it to me, I mean, what, it took me 5 minutes to pack the car. It took me an hour to unpack it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I was so excited. I told them I had a sore on my bunion on my left foot. And, boy, I had sore on both of them. So they were swelling up for some reason. And none of my shoes fit right, you know, so they were always rubbing. I mean, I'm okay now. One bunion's gone anyway. But, that sore just happened, an open sore like that. You can't get a transplant at the time. They give you such a big infusion of drugs to basically destroy your immune system.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, at first, and then after, you're still going to have to take more medicine. I couldn't take it. And then eventually, they just told me they were removing me from the list because I had, you know, the sore that had to be taken care of. So I eventually got my entire big toe, part of my foot on the left side, got that amputated. And it healed, and when it healed, I contacted the whole system, you know, said, let's go. Now get me back on that list. I'll be at the top. I'll have a kidney next month. And they, no, we can't, we're not going to give it to you now. We decided you're not eligible for it. You don't, your circulation is too bad in your left leg. And that really tore me up because vascular surgeons, when they amputated part of my left foot, they made sure they opened up my arteries in my left side. You know, it put stents all over the place.
Seems so like they're just punished.
So I could get this transplant. Yeah.
Seems like they're punishing you for being sick, which is why you need a donation. Right.
Exactly. Well, this is the VA system. It's a horrible system. They get the leftover kidneys in the first place.
Right.
And there's so many veterans that need a transplant that they have to find any reason to deny you. Because, like, if they got too many people on the list, they eventually get too old and sick to get one. And that's basically what happened to me. I had talked to a doctor when I first, you know, 9 years ago, went to get put on the list, and I finished all the tests, and it was good. And he was a young doctor, and he never should have said this to me, but he was being honest. He said, Mr. Gundy, he said, I was 57, 59 at this time. He goes, you're too old to get a transplant. I said, what? He said, you will be. He said, you get on this list, you will be too old and have too many problems eventually to get, by the time the kidney comes up, you won't be able to get one. And he was right. Anyway, but I'm still going to fight this. I'm going to fight it.
Definitely do. And so let me just say this. So if anybody out there is in great health and really would just love to give the gift of life in the form of a kidney donation, we are putting a link to your organ donation. I think it's like a coordinator.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we're going to put a link to that. And if anybody has any expertise on how he can, like, get back on this list and fight this through, this is through the VA, correct?
Right.
Okay. So if anybody has any information, give us a contact, or, you know, contact us, or you can contact Mr. Gundy on Facebook. And then we're going to try to, you know, see if anybody has any questions for you or whatever, and perhaps we could just incorporate that into part two. And if you think of any other stories you'd like to tell, we definitely want to hear it.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, Tina. You're welcome, Tina. I had a wonderful time talking
Me
to you.
Me too. I definitely had a great time talking to you.
And I appreciate you, what you're doing with the transplant list link and things. And, we'll be back in touch. I'm looking forward to the next time we can talk again.
Me too. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. And happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you too. You take care.